This podcast is for informational purposes only and does not constitute legal, tax, investment, financial, or other advice. It is not intended to cause or induce breach of an existing agency agreement.
Hello?
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 This is the Vancouver Weather State Podcast.
And welcome back to Vancouver Real Estate Podcast. I'm your host, Adam Scalina.
And I'm your other host, Matt Scalina.
And Matt, should say host, but also realtors with Oakwind Realty in downtown Vancouver. Today, a very exciting episode. We've got Brendan Lacerda. He is the Moody Analytics Director and Senior Economist.
Yeah.
For Canada.
He focuses on Canada. He lives in the United States. He's a past guest fan favorite and was gracious enough to join us again. So it's super exciting having Brendan back on the show.
Yeah, really excited about this conversation. We cover the state of the Canadian economy, what's going to be happening with inflation and interest rates, according to Moody's Analytics. And of course, what's going to be happening with Canadian real estate, but also specifically with Vancouver real estate. Lots of insight in this conversation.
Yeah, I mean, what I love about talking to Brendan most is, you know, Moody's is like risk mitigation, right? They're
right.
Playing out models of worst case scenarios for Canadian banks, institutions. It's like really in-depth analysis about potential different outcomes for Canada. So his take on where we're at, what the biggest risks are, and what the next couple of years look like is not to be taken with a grain of salt. This is super interesting stuff.
Yeah, great conversation. Can't wait to get to that. But before we get to that, Matt, we've got a headline.
MLA Newswire Weekly headline, a pre-sale update brought to you by the MLA Canada Advisory Team, and the hits just keep coming here. Headline, Trudeau announces more measures to speed up construction of homes in the form of a new $6 billion housing infrastructure fund. And Adam, I just want to run down some of the new spending at the federal level.
Everybody saw the headlines about this, but yeah, I don't think a lot of people did a deep dive into what it actually means.
Yeah, so let me break down some of the numbers here, Adam. Trudeau last week announced an extra $400 million for the Housing Accelerator Fund. To date, they've given $4 billion, so now it's $4.4 billion in the Housing Accelerator Fund. They announced $6 billion for the Canada Housing Infrastructure Fund. A lot of bees being thrown around here. $6 billion for the Canada Housing Infrastructure Fund. This is targeting new infrastructure that the whole country desperately needs as we build new housing. $5 billion of that $6 billion will be distributed only if municipalities commit to the housing targets, including implementing a three-year freeze on increasing development charges, adapting forthcoming changes to the National Building Code to support accessible, affordable, and climate-friendly housing options. So that's kind of interesting. I feel like David Eby and Trudeau are now kind of in lockstep in thinking very big and using carrots and sticks to get this new housing built. He also announced that they'll be delivering a $15 billion top-up to the apartment construction loan program that's set to build a minimum of 30,000 new apartments. So we can expect 131,000 new apartments within the next decade. We're not done, Adam. He also announced new reforms to the apartment construction loan program, which means it's easier to access those low interest rate loans for builders to build more apartment housing, rental housing, basically across the country. So a lot of new money being thrown at building new homes and a lot of new money thrown at building new rental. So this is purpose-built rental homes across the country.
Yeah. And I mean, I guess the biggest takeaway or the biggest impact is likely that in the medium to long term, we're going to see an increase of rental supply, which will hopefully help stabilize and normalize rental price growth.
But here's the question I have. So we definitely more purpose-built rental is great for the rental market and for I think, the Canadian economy overall. What does that do, though, if a lot of builders that were thinking of building strata are now looking at these low interest loans and going back into building more rental.
Well, this, I'm guessing, is going to result in fewer sale for sale properties proportionally, right? And I mean, that limits options for ownership for some people.
Fewer pre-sale projects coming.
Maybe.
That might be the result of all these new policies. If you like what you heard in the MLA Newswire weekly headline, subscribe to the MLA Newswire. This is a daily email roundup of the latest real estate news and market insights. Visit MLAcanada.com to subscribe now.
Yeah, Matt. And we are also sponsored today by Scalina Real Estate, which is our real estate team in Vancouver. We have got a hot new listing coming.
This one's hot.
This is early next week. You're the first to hear it today on the show. Two bed, two bath, 983 square feet. Really good size.
Yeah, that's a nice size two bed.
Really fantastic layout. This is at 288 East 14th, which is basically Main and 14th, like center ice.
Question awesome for you, Adam. Location. Is there a better location in the city than Main and 14th?
Honestly, I was thinking about it, like Save-On Foods, all the coffee shops, restaurants, you know, I was there a few nights ago at On and Chi.
No
good
big
thief
deal.
Coming.
Yeah.
Which is really exciting. So many great restaurants. I mean, I love Main Street.
Is there now, you used to live around there.
Yes.
As did I at one point, I think across the street from this listing, is there not like a candy store?
There's a snack land.
What snack land? That's what it's called.
There's a whole country.
I was driving down Main Street and yeah, my daughter brought it up. Like, oh, hey, where's snack land? I was like, oh, I forgot about snack land.
It's a legit snack place. I think that was, that was pre-COVID, but I was COVID weight.
Yeah.
Of snack land.
Well, yeah, it should be in the write-up for sure. If you want to see this write-up and this listing, it's going to be at VancouverRealEstatePodcast.com, yes. I guess on Monday when the listing launches. Yeah. And while you're there, hit that button, sell with us.
Yeah, Matt, it's going to be listed on our site at Vancouver Real Estate Podcast where we feature all of our listings at $979,900 for this property. It's a great one. Have a look. And while you're there, if you click sell with us, you're going to get the sold plan, which stands for start on launch date. That's the acronym. This is a way to get step-by-step advice to get your home ready for market, to get top dollar in the shortest amount of time. Take advantage. It's an instant download. Head over to Vancouver Real Estate Podcast, click sell with us and get the sold plan.
Absolutely. But let's cut to our talk with Brendan Lacerda, past guest fan favorite. Fantastic conversation.
This is a great one. This podcast is sponsored by Marcon, a local family-owned and managed real estate development and construction company that's been around for nearly four decades. Marcon is not only committed to high-quality construction, but it also is making a positive impact in the communities in which it builds, all across the Lower Mainland.
We want to highlight two incredible Marcon projects. Elmwood, a 38-story tower located at Burquitlam's most important intersection, Como Lake Avenue and Clark Road. This landmark tower will feature 335 condominiums, over 37,000 square feet of office and retail space, and almost 20,000 square feet of amenity space. Elmwood has been incredibly popular with 80% sold currently, but they still have a great selection of junior one-bedroom all the way to three-bedroom homes remaining. Check out marcon.ca/elmwood for more.
And Matt, we are also excited about Soane House, Marcon's newest community in West Coquitlam. With 165 homes ranging from junior one beds to three beds, Soane House offers the perfect West Coast aesthetic with a more nuanced Nordic-inspired design. Register today at marcon.ca/soanehouse. That's S-O-E-N-H-A-U-S. Or you can learn more at marcon.ca or follow them at Instagram at Marcon Homes.
Marcon, building for life.
Okay, so we're here with Brendan Lacerda. He is the director and senior economist at Moody Analytics. How you doing, Brendan?
I'm doing great. Thanks so much for having me, guys.
Yeah, we should say past guest fan favorite. I feel like every time we have you on, Brendan, we look back and try and think, oh, it's been about 6 months and it's always been longer. So thanks again for your time. I feel like it was, late 2022 last time you were on the show? But I think our listeners are going to be excited to have you back. That's for sure.
Yeah, thanks. I think this is my third appearance on the show. I couldn't quite recall what my forecast was from the last time I visited. So
we didn't listen.
Hopefully, 100% accurate.
The write up that we had for it was Adam was reading it before we went live. It was, do you have And he has a forecast. You have a pillow to hug.
Yeah, grab a pillow to hug or something.
I don't know. It must have been pretty dire. But for listeners who haven't tuned into your past appearances, Brendan, can you tell us a little bit about yourself?
Yeah, absolutely. So I work on Moody's Analytics global model development team. So I'm primarily tasked with building the models that we use to produce our forecasts, our baseline forecasts, all alternative scenario forecasts. So then in addition to building the models, I'm also the lead forecaster for Canada in our Canada Macroeconomic Service. So both a builder and a user of the models. And primarily what we do is we assist banks, insurers, financial institutions with preparing for alternative scenarios. How well is their balance sheet going to hold up during the next recession? So a lot of what we do is stress tests for banks to prepare them for the worst case scenario, which maybe shades my thinking. I'm a little more on the doom side of things because I'm always trying to think about how things are going to go wrong. Full disclosure.
And Brendan, is it centered around housing or just the economy in general?
Yeah, so that's a good point to clarify. I am a macroeconomist, so I am tasked with the entire Canadian economy. Housing is obviously a critical element of that, but macroeconomist first, housing economist second. And particularly with the importance of housing in Canada right now, it's obviously attracted a lot of our focus, so we're doing a lot of research in that area. But technically speaking, I'm a macroeconomist first.
Fantastic. Well, this is a great question for you then. How is the Canadian economy doing?
Not as well as you would expect, given the demographics. It's pretty striking that, population grew over 3% over the last year and the economy grew about 1%. So you think without that support, things probably would have looked definitely a bit worse. Where is the Canadian economy headed? At the moment, heading into the first part of 2024, it seems to be much the same. Generally, weak growth, a mix of positive and negative signals coming out the data. Nothing, I think to get too optimistic about. The economy is definitely showing its sore spots. The expectation is that growth does start to revive once the Bank of Canada starts cutting interest rates. That being said, we can talk about this a little bit more. Don't immediately expect all interest rates to start coming down. 5-year mortgage rate, probably going to stay elevated for a while around where it currently is, just because the Bank of Canada is going to continue quantitative tightening. Even though we're in this weak patch at the moment, it doesn't look like we're going to get a strong rebound even when interest rates start getting cut, because they're still going to be elevated. And households are still going to be having their rates reset and deal with this increase in debt service obligations. That cramps consumption. And then businesses look and they say, consumers don't have a lot of spending power right now. I'm not going to invest a lot in new equipment, new facilities, significant new hiring. So you end up with this, so-so growth path over the next year.
One thing that strikes me is we're the kind of increasing divergence of the U.S. economy and the Canadian economy. Why, in your mind, like you started that answer, Brendan, by saying not as good as you'd expect, and then talking a little bit about immigration. But have you kind of unpacked where we went wrong? What are those sore spots?
I think that there's a couple reasons that the United States economy is outperforming right now. One of the biggest differences, I think, is the difference in fiscal policy. The Canadian government is being quite conservative right now. Federal government's budget deficit is pretty small at the moment compared to the United States, which is running like a 6% of GDP budget deficit, which entails its own problems. The United States debt is currently on a pretty ugly trajectory right now. But generally, the posture of the government, the U.S. fiscal policymakers are still, pumping a lot of stimulus into the economy compared to, what Canada's doing. The other, second really big element of this is just going to be the sensitivity to interest rates. You know, in the United States, home borrowers get the benefit of a 30-year fixed mortgage. That product is not available in Canada. Your rates are resetting every 5 years. Therefore, you know, Canadian households have to curb their spending, raise their savings in order to meet those debt service obligations. And the last thing I'll mention, you know, the United States has really gotten a tailwind off of increased oil exports, which is kind of interesting because you think of Canada traditionally as like the oil exporter. You know, and so, you know, you think about the story of, you know, Russia gets, you know, exiled from, you know, most global oil markets. You know, which countries are filling that gap? It's really the United States that stepped up and boosted global supply. And on Canada, you really don't even see that much of a change in oil production, you know, following the onset of war in Eastern Europe. And that has to do with capacity constraints in Canada. You know, Canada didn't want to build new pipelines. You know, they didn't want to build new rail capacity. So even though that demand's out there, Canadian energy industry hasn't really been able to respond to it. You know, put those three factors together and you know, the United States is growing a lot faster than Canada. You know, even though, you know, I think our population only grew slightly less than like 1% over the last year.
So I guess if I'm understanding you correctly then, Brendan, it sounds like immigration in many ways is propping up the economy. What happens if we reduce immigration in your mind?
You know, I think universally economists would recognize that, you know, over the long run, immigration is a big benefit to an economy. I think in the case of Canada, you know, you can also see that in the short run, you know, I guess we can describe them as growing pains. You know, the supply of housing just isn't able to respond fast enough. And, you know, we're seeing this explosion in rental prices right now. You know, for even as high as interest rates are, you know, housing prices are pretty much holding up really well too. So, yeah, I would say over the long run, you know, immigration is going to be a big boom to the Canadian economy. But clearly, there are pain points in the short run.
And in your mind, is Canada's economy healthy?
As an American, I'm going to be a little careful about, you know, criticizing my my friend and neighbor here. I will say the biggest...
Speak freely, you're amongst friends.
the biggest criticism I would put against the Canadian economy is that Canada really underinvests in research and development. If you look across the globe and you look at the share of the economy, the share of economic spending that goes to, you know, scientific research and development, business research and development, in Canada, that is a much smaller share of the economy. The consequence of that is Canada has relatively weak productivity growth compared to the United States. So without that, you know, productivity growth, that technology growth, you're not getting rising living standards, you know, increasing GDP per capita. And you know, I think a lot of people have cited that recently that, you know, population is growing faster than GDP. So GDP per capita right. In Canada has been falling at the moment. The remedy for that is productivity growth. So investing more in, you know, technology, that's the avenue to prosperity.
And just for our listeners, weakening productivity and a lower GDP per capita, basically, like in terms of how that plays out on the ground, it's your standard of living is just getting worse.
Exactly. Economists would say GDP per capita, you know, man on the street would just say that's your standard of living. They're not, of course, exactly comparable, but.
Right. Right. But just, yeah, for the layman among us, which is actually Adam and myself. In terms of research and development, one thing I you know, we constantly have heard over the last decade, at least, is that, you know, a lot of investment that could go in all sorts of directions in Canada end up in housing. And that's been a problem, or it should be a problem, thinking about the long-term impacts on the Canadian economy. Is housing too much of the Canadian economy? And maybe I'm just thinking in relation, obviously in China, there's all sorts of issues with housing right now. How does housing factor in to as kind of a potential problem, whether it's taking investment or it's too much of the economy? What are your thoughts there?
I I disagree with that observation. I don't think the Canadian economy is too focused on housing. I think it maybe looks that way because Canada needs lots of new housing to accommodate population growth. But I was, just earlier, I was looking at, like multifamily units under construction. And I think there's like 300,000 or so multifamily units under construction right now. And, you think you could probably get maybe two or three people, into each unit. So you look at the current pace of construction in Canada right now, and I think it's pretty consistent with where population growth is. So it wouldn't suggest that there's some excess amount of the economy going into housing. In China, that was certainly the case because their citizens use housing as a savings vehicle for retirement, which is kind of got messed up because there's a huge surplus of, just vacant units, eventually just all collapsed. So I don't think the Canadian economy is overly devoted to housing. But getting back to this point about, what is the economy spending? What are we spending our money on? Where are we investing? Going back to, this idea, why is the United States doing better than Canada right now? There's also, an investment boom in the United States right now. There's a lot of money going into green energy technologies. There's a lot of money going into semiconductors and, AI research. I saw, an interesting observation the other day, which, if you look at the, market capitalization of the S&P 500 in the United States, who are all the biggest companies in the United States now? It's Facebook, Microsoft, Google, Tesla. The tech companies have, taken over, and, their investment dollars are driving a lot of growth in the United States. The question is, does Canada have those same, major players who are really, pumping in a lot of investment dollars into the economy? And it doesn't seem to be the case.
Brennan, maybe moving on to inflation and interest rates, what's your take on inflation in Canada? And will we see a rate cut this year, in your opinion?
I do. Right now in our baseline forecast, we're still penciled in for a June rate cut. I think the only concern about that forecast right now is we got some hotter than expected inflation data out of the United States yesterday. That means that, the Fed is likely to delay its rate cuts till, late into 2024 seems likely. Then there becomes a concern. Typically the Bank of Canada doesn't want to get too far apart from, where the Fed is. So that opens some risk that, the Bank of Canada might want to delay further into the second half of the year. In terms of inflation, we might see some similar dynamics. Don't be surprised if you see CPI inflation pick up a tiny bit over the next 2 months as some energy price increases pass through. But generally speaking, given the weaker position of the Canadian economy relative to the U.S. economy, we just saw unemployment, spike up last Friday. We should expect Canada to move ahead of the U.S. Fed. So, if the rate cut doesn't come in June, I would still expect it to come shortly after. Because despite what's going on with inflation, I think things look pretty good there. Core inflation just above 3%. It doesn't need to move too much to get below there. The labor market, there's concerns about the labor market, the strength of the labor market, the strength of GDP growth. So I think I would recommend the Bank of Canada likely move in June or their next meeting or two after.
And how, in your mind, how divergent can they be from the U.S.? Like, it seems like, we have a much weaker economy. Lending policy is different in Canada, where households are getting crushed in a way that they're not in the U.S. Are you thinking, hypothetically, the Fed pushes off their cuts to potentially later in the year, or maybe, maybe even into the following year? Are we still going to expect three cuts this year? Like, how divergent can Canada actually be in this case?
Yeah, it's interesting. I think Bloomberg and Reuters ask the same question in their survey every month about how far can the policies get apart. I guess for the casual observer, the concern here is that, you have Canada, the United States, they're each setting interest rates. to simplify things, I'll say, you know, money likes to, you know, gravitate towards high interest rate. You know, you think about if you have a lot of cash, you know, where would you, you know, want to, you know, invest it? You would, you know, be attracted to high interest rate, high returns. So the problem is if the interest rates get too far apart between the two countries, you know, the concern is that capital, financial capital would start leaving Canada and start going to the United States. That would cause currency to weaken significantly. That would also, you know, probably cause investment to decline in Canada. So that's the concern. How far apart can policy get? Probably about 100 basis points would be the short answer. That's roughly the consensus. I don't know if I have a particularly strong view, since that assumption's never really been tested in history in terms of, you know, United States and Canada getting really far apart. It's been a couple of decades since we've seen some real divergence. So I think, you know, I think in their minds, they want to keep it under 100 basis point spread between the two countries' policy rates.
What are the biggest risks to the Canadian economy right now?
I think the biggest risk still is debt. You know, the economy is still, you know, in the grips of high interest rates. We've been struggling through it fairly well because the labor market's really strong. You saw, you know, annual wage growth hasn't really shown too much signs of slowing down. So, you know, average hourly pay is rising at about 5%, a little bit more than 5% year over year now. So to the extent that, you know, households are getting crimped by, you know, rising debt service obligations, they've also had rising incomes, which has, you know, helped to, you know, to save the day or, you know, avoid a more serious retrenchment. The biggest risk is, you know, as I mentioned, you know, firms are looking at consumer demand right now, and it's weak, but not terrible. If that calculus flips and, you know, say, for example, the Bank of Canada says, you know, there's no chance we're going to cut interest rates this year. Consumers retrench because, you know, they don't, you know, they're still getting hit with these high costs. And if firms look at that situation and say, you know, we're going to start layoff, then once the labor market starts unwinding, then people don't have the ability to accommodate these these increasing debt service obligations. Then they start defaulting on their debt, delinquencies, bankruptcies, and, you know, then it spreads through the whole financial system. So that's my biggest fear, is the labor market unravels, we get lots of layoffs, that interacts with, you know, what's going on with debt, and we end up with this sort of, you know, a bit of a financial crisis with, you know, rising delinquencies and defaults.
Hey, everyone. Pardon the interruption. We just want to take a quick minute to thank the following sponsors who make this show possible.
This podcast is sponsored by Common Ground Consulting.
Are you developing in the Lower Mainland? Common Ground Consulting is a development management and consulting company with experience in single family, townhouses, multifamily, and commercial developments.
What I love about Common Ground, Adam, is they manage the whole development process, from due diligence and feasibility reports for initial purchase of land to completing rezoning, development permits, and building permits.
They streamline the whole process with strong relationships with sub-consultants and municipalities and a deep understanding of all city requirements.
Common Ground Consulting. Feasibility and efficiency prioritized every step of the way.
Learn more at commonground-consulting.com or 604-807-6419.
We are also sponsored by Oakwin Realty. This is our real estate brokerage, best brokerage in the city, hands down. If you are in the industry, a new agent, an aspiring agent, somebody just looking to make a change, new culture, new energy, new resources, head over to oakwin.com/join, type in VRP 2020. That's oakwin.com/join, type in VRP 2020. Not only do you get to meet Michael Morgan and the gang, the bigwigs over at Oakwin, you get a huge incentive for first going to oakwin.com/join, typing in VRP 2020.
So that's the biggest risk. Is there, I guess I'm just thinking about, you know, I feel like if we were talking maybe three, four months ago, we would be talking about soft landing. It's basically, what are the potential, or what maybe on a percentage basis, that kind of unemployment unraveling and then, you know, working through that process you just outlined, how likely is that?
Yeah, I mean, that's a pretty dark scenario. That's roughly the narrative we lay out in our recession scenario for Canada. And, you know, right now we're only putting the probability of a recession in Canada in the next 12 months around, you know, 35% or so, you know, 1 in 3. So in our view, odds are we'll get through this weak patch. Interest rates will start coming down. Growth will rejuvenate and, you know, the economy regains speed and, you know, pulls away from the danger zone. That's the baseline view. Probability of that darker recession, 30%, or even, you know, the more sort of extreme financial crisis element that I was describing, you know, put the odds of that lower down near like 10%.
But 70% on the side of coming out of this fairly unscathed by the sounds of things.
Yeah, that's a little bit more optimistic than the tone I probably struck in previous calls. But, you know, I would say I've been surprised.
I like it, though.
I think we have to be impressed by the durability of the labor market and the housing market, you know, to this increase in interest rates. Because if we remember, you know, the conventional wisdom in, you know, mid-2022 was that, you know, these interest rates were surely going to put the Canadian economy into recession. You know, people said the same thing about the United States, and you know, that has not come to pass. So I think we should have a little more faith in the economy.
So then maybe thinking about housing then and Canadian real estate, you know, a lot of people are talking about when rates start to come down that there'll be more optimism in the market, and we'll see a lot more buyers come off the sidelines and a lot of upward pressure on pricing. Do you see it that way, Brendan, or what's your take on Canadian real estate?
Yeah, this was, I hinted at that at the beginning of the call. You know, obviously real estate, a very, you know, interest rate sensitive sector. So the next question is, well, when the bank starts cutting rates, you know, is what's going to happen to the housing market? The immediate effects are likely to be more psychological than they are, you know, pure accounting.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, people are probably going to be feeling a lot better because, you know, people form expectations. You know, they think that, you know, hey, even if I'm in a bad mortgage right now, you know, things are looking a lot better. Things are going to be looking a lot better in, you know, 2 years because the Bank of Canada started cutting rates. So, you know, I think there's obviously a little bit of pent up demand with, you know, what we see going on in the rental market, you know, given how low vacancies are, given how strong demand is over there, given how fast rental prices are rising. I think there's probably a sizable chunk of folks who would be, you know, glad to transition to homeowners. But the challenge is going to be that we can't expect the five-year mortgage to immediately start declining once the Bank of Canada starts cutting interest rates. Because the issue there is that Bank of Canada is still going to be undergoing quantitative tightening, likely till the end of 2024, early 2025. And that has a much larger impact on longer-term yields, which, you know, the five-year mortgage rate, I think, you know, most connected to, you know, other bonds around the same maturity, like the government five-year and some other private lending rates. So the problem is, even as the policy rate, even as the Bank of Canada starts cutting, we expect mortgage rates to go sideways for a while, which means the affordability calculus for a lot of households isn't going to be much improved. Those monthly payments are still going to be too large. And so there's still going to be a lot of folks standing on the sidelines waiting for mortgage rates to come down. So we have we have a stronger pickup farther out in the forecast, you know, getting out into like 2025, 2026, that's where I would expect more rejuvenation in sales activity, price appreciation.
Interesting. So, you know, I would say on the ground, 2024 so far has been, you know, kind of okay, but a little spotty, a little lackluster. I some local economists at the start of the year were saying latter half of 2024 is going to be busier. It sounds like potentially that's the case, but you're really thinking 2025, 2026.
Yeah, I mean, I can think some folks are going to roll the dice on a, you know, like variable rate mortgage in late 2024, you know, playing the explain the expected decline in interest rates. That'll stir some demand. You know, people will finance that way. But I would expect demand to remain reserved, just because, like I said, you know, the affordability calculus hasn't changed.
Mm-hmm. I don't know how much you're focusing on kind of the regions of Canada on a day in day out basis, Brendan. But thoughts on Vancouver specifically, and maybe British Columbia housing or the British Columbia economy?
Yeah, we produce a whole host of regional housing forecasts. You know, we have a whole subnational model where we do construction activity, prices, GDP, employment, every sort of thing for the provinces and the metro areas. I sort of more personally tend to focus on Ontario, which I have a team of folks with me that cover the country. I am somewhat familiar with the Vancouver market because I was looking into it prior to our call. Generally, what you see in our forecast is, everyone across the country has to pay the same mortgage rates. So really, what differentiates the regional economies largely tends to be, demographics and employment growth. And by our forecast, by what we're seeing, the West is really dominating the East. So in terms of the strongest appreciations we're expecting over the next 5 years, I think that the top three are Calgary, Edmonton, and Vancouver. So even though, Vancouver has one of the most severe affordability problems in the country, it just seems to be the case that it seems to have little effect on demand. And people are still flocking to the metro area. So, that's going to drive demand up. That's going to drive prices up.
Interesting. Okay. Well, that's some of our listeners are not. Some of our listeners are going to really be excited by that, and others are going to be shaking their head, I think. Brendan, maybe as a final question here, I have a two-part question. One, what does Vancouver real estate look like in the next 1, 3, and 5 years? And also, what do interest rates look like in say end of 2024? But then 3 years out, 5 years out, what can Canadians feeling the pinch expect?
Yeah, in terms of the outlook for Vancouver real estate, our forecast has prices staying pretty much flat until early 2025. And early 2025 should be a bit of a turning point for most housing markets in the country, Vancouver included. That is really when we expect mortgage rates to start falling. As I mentioned earlier, we expect the Bank of Canada to start cutting, June or the next meeting. Quantitative easing or quantitative tightening stops in early 2025. And that's really the turning point, we think, for the housing market, because that will start bringing the mortgage rate down. In terms of, one of the questions is, long term, where do we think mortgage rates are going to land? And I think the answer to that is that, the Bank of Canada is probably going to bring the overnight rate long run to about 2.5%, which would put the 5-year mortgage rate around 5.25, somewhere around there. So, that's roughly our view on what we would expect for, the equilibrium rate for mortgages. That's certainly, I think, higher than, people have thought about, in the years leading up to the pandemic, mortgage rates were lower than that. So we do have to, I think, adjust our expectations that, we're not going back to those days of super low mortgage rates. The only way we're getting back to, super low mortgage rates is if a, pretty bad recession hits the economy. So we have to grapple with the fact that, long run mortgage rates probably, we have to think about, in terms of long term, budget planning for households, probably try to accommodate a 5% mortgage. And I think that's just as far as, where we think the Vancouver market's going to go and where we think interest rates are going to go.
Well, fantastic.
Yeah. Well, maybe we'll leave it there. But Brendan, we have this segment called the 5-Wire, 5 lighthearted questions that we end every show with. Can you stick around for that?
Sure. I Much appreciate lighthearted questions.
The Five Wire is brought to you by Scalina Real Estate.
Hey, that sounds familiar.
Scalina Real Estate is a full-service real estate company serving Vancouver, offering comprehensive, tried and tested buyer and seller systems.
With over a decade in the top 10% of realtors in the Lower Mainland and a perfect 5-star Google review, Scalina Real Estate can help with all your real estate needs.
We also have an extensive network of the best industry professionals and trades right across the country.
There's no reason to not get in touch. Head over to scalinarealestate.com to find out more.
Well, question number one is one book that you've read recently that you would recommend for our listeners.
This is going to sound kind of crazy. I'm finally reading The Lord of the Rings. My wife is like the biggest fan in the world. This is the strangest thing. My wife is the biggest Lord of the Rings fan in the world. You know, read all the books, even the ones people have never heard of, you know, Silmarillion and stuff like that. And I always felt like, you know, a bad husband or something, that I never, you know, shared her interest. So I am officially, I think I'm like halfway through the Two Towers right now. And I'm actually really enjoying it. I'm not really like a huge, you know, fantasy fan and whatnot, but I'll give a plug to the Lord of the Rings books.
Nice. That's the first time that's ever been said on the show. So
in the last few years, what new belief, behavior, or habit has most improved your life?
You know what? I've tried to become a little more regular about giving the dog a walk every single night. When I was in grad school and I had, you know, an amazing schedule, I used to, you know, take my dogs for like a hike up in the woods like every single morning, and then, you know, roll into my desk around, you know, 10, 11 a.m. So sadly, that isn't possible anymore. And, you know, he's gotten a lot older. But I find it's just very, they're sort of like peaceful and relaxing. It's a nice way to sort of decompress at the end of the day. So yeah, if you got a dog, go take him for a walk. You know, you'll always feel better afterwards.
Nice. Question number three, what have you been binge watching lately, or a movie recommendation?
Oh, I think I'm watching that same show that everyone else, that Shogun, that sort of.
Oh, I've only seen the ads for that. Is that any good?
That's pretty good. I would recommend that. But in terms of movies, I would have to give a big recommendation to, I think it's called Talk to Me. It's an Australian horror movie. And there's I'll give away the basic premise is there's like a sculpture of a hand. And if you grab it, you can talk to dead people. It's wow. if you like horror movies, so I'm giving a horror movie recommendation here. If you like horror, check out Talk to Me. It's very creepy.
95% on Rotten Tomatoes.
There you go.
Wow. That was quick. Okay. Adam's got Spotify open to check this out. Favorite band or music?
Favorite band or music?
Or something you've been listening to recently.
Yeah, hit me. I'm a huge like Fleetwood Mac fan. listened to lots of Fleetwood Mac recently. Yeah, I'm trying to think. I should send you guys my Spotify playlist. But you can just scan through that one.
Yeah, although Fleetwood Mac's pretty good. I'd take that all day.
Yeah, you know what? I think last time you guys asked me like what maybe was, like, if I could take one album with me on like a deserted island. And I was remiss because I was kicking myself afterwards because I said, oh, like Rumours by Fleetwood Mac is probably my favorite album. I don't know why I didn't mention it. Again, I'm an oldie but goodie here.
And last but not least, Brendan, something that you have purchased recently for under $1,500 that's had a positive impact on your life.
I'm going to break the budget a little bit on this one. If you don't mind, I think it might be pushing about like 2,000 or so, 2,000 US. But speaking of real estate, I recently did a home renovation, and I finished my basement, and I put in a mechanical projector, and I got a 4K HD projector, and it shoots like a 100-inch image, and it's pretty amazing. It feels like you have your own movie theater at home. So the only problem with the projector is it only works in like pitch black. So kind of have to have it in a basement or a dark room. It will not work in your family room in the daylight, which is obvious shortcoming. But if you're building a home theater, these 4K projectors they have now are, and I bought one that was, maybe a little more high end. Even have like smaller portable ones that are kind of cool. I had some friends over for like a party the other night. You can put up, like a basketball game or something, project it onto the side of your house while the party's going. It's kind of fun.
Sounds good. So Brendan, Moody's, of course, is economy.com, which is an amazing URL. How can people find out what you guys are doing over there? And I know I'm subscribed to the, I think they come in daily, actually. But yeah, how can people find out what you're doing over at Moody's?
Yeah, exactly. I recommend you all check out economy.com. You can sign up for a free trial of the website. We have a lot of great newsletters we put out discussing how we think, recent incoming data is impacting the forecast, which is, sort of always the big question of how is the forecast evolving as, the new data comes out. So I would strongly recommend people head over there.
Incredible. Well, thanks so much for taking the time today, Brendan. And yeah, really appreciate you having you back on the program.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks for having me back.
So there you have it, folks, our discussion with Brendan Lacerda, Director and Senior Economist from Moody Analytics.
Really enjoyed having Brendan on the program. Always great having an outsider's perspective on not only Vancouver real estate, but the Canadian real estate market.
I got to say, I feel like this is strangely maybe the most optimistic I've heard Brendan Lacerda, and he's been on the show a number of times before.
Right.
I wasn't expecting that, honestly.
No, and it's also interesting because, we've had this conversation with a lot of people lately, specifically people that are kind of trying, maybe sellers that are thinking about timing the market this year or buyers that are thinking about trying to time, know, when to buy. And I think his point is well taken that, the urgency to buy with the interest rates, there's almost seems like there's this idea that rates are going to go down 25 basis points and the whole world's going to explode and everyone's going to be buying everything. And it's a more, it's nice to kind of hear him basically talk about how, it's going to take time for people to, it's going to be a much more gradual approach to the market, right?
Yeah. It's not like, we're not going back to zero anytime soon, but the sounds of things. And, but it does seem like his point about being important psychologically, it will feel good. And I don't think I'm speaking as just somebody who's in the real estate world to have an idea of like, okay, we peaked at the interest rate we're at now and we're on whatever that downside looks like. We're on the downside. We're moving.
We're in the back nine.
Yeah, exactly. We're moving in the right direction. I think that's going to, it will have an impact on the market for sure.
Yeah. And the other thing that I thought was really interesting that came out of that conversation is the divergence between the US and Canadian. Like, because this is a thing that comes up all the time. It's like, well, what's going to happen with the Fed? And so you always think, well, how much does Canada actually have to mirror what's happening with the rates?
When he literally gave us the
100 bips.
Yeah, that's exactly
which is, I think it's good to know. I feel like that was a huge, huge piece of, a great insight that came out of this conversation. Because I've been thinking about that a lot lately and we've never asked that question on this show.
Yeah, the other, and just as a final thought, my general sense of the Canadian economy, I think he's more positive on the overall economic output of Canada right now. I was feeling pretty down, but I don't know why.
He's got to step up that R&D.
Exactly. Yeah. Although that was interesting too. You know, Mike, that question came out of just reading trolls on Twitter, by the way, about overinvestment in housing.
It's what you do to lull yourself to sleep every night.
Exactly. Anyway, what else do we have before we cut for the day, Adam? We have VancouverRealEstatePodcast.com. This is our website that is always improving. We have our entire back catalog. So if you're looking for Brendan Lacerda's take in 2018 or whenever his first time on.
Fun to listen to those.
It is
ones.
Fun to listen to Brendan. We had him on in early COVID too.
I think it was 2019, 2022, and now back in 2024. Or maybe it was 2020.
I feel like this might be his fourth time. We should go back and check, but I think he thought it was his third. In any event, I remember distinctly being on your deck in COVID, being 6 feet apart, talking to Brendan Lacerda.
Wiping down a bag of chips.
I might be. Yeah, I don't remember that. I think that was you that was doing that.
But family anyway, size.
It is VancouverRealEstatePodcast.com is what we're talking about. You can sign up for the live wire. You can check out all our featured listings. You can sign up for the other tried and true research tool. We have private client services.
Yeah, Matt. And if you're not using PCS, you're standing still while the rest of us power walk by. You get sold prices. Days on market. You basically get realtor level information for free. It's available at your fingertips over at VancouverRealEstatePodcast.com. Just click buy with us. Super exciting time to be monitoring the market. Lots of people signing up for PCS. I don't know why it's free and it allows you like realtor level information. I don't know why you wouldn't have that. So
no,
head over to VancouverRealEstatePodcast.com. Click buy with us. Set up your own free account. What else, Matt, do we got before we cut for the day? It's an interesting time in the market. And I do feel like right now, the inventory, what you can actually buy out there. You know, we've talked on this show for a long time about limited selection in a lot of the sub-markets. So many new listings came on after Easter long weekend. And now you actually have like awesome product to go out and buy. So if you're someone who has been hanging around and listening, and you're
and that was
about
not
buying.
The case in 2023. I feel like at this time last year, you were like similar levels of demand, no product.
Yeah, like a tier one for every 50 listings that came up, it felt like right now. I feel like right now, like there's just great and it's end user type product, like stuff you want to buy that you're excited about. If you're looking to buy, definitely get in touch. Matt, how can people get in touch with you?
You can call me at any time, 778-847-2854 or Matt at VancouverRealEstatePodcast.com.
Or you can try me at 778-866-4574 or Adam at VancouverRealEstatePodcast.com.
And of course, we got that Kokomo line info at VancouverRealEstatePodcast.com.
Well, have a great week and we're back next week with another great episode.
Take care.
2,000 Faces for Radio. Subscribe today.